Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're very welcome back. Now, joining me in studio is Donal Ryan. And you know Donal Ryan, his debut novel, The Spinning Heart. You remember that? It was longlisted for the Booker Prize. And it was all about a community in the aftermath of the economic crash and the disaster that happened in 2008. The 21 characters from that book, they wouldn't leave him alone, still going around in his head. So he brought them back for his latest book. And we're glad he has. Heart, Be at Peace is what it's called. Donal, welcome, studio.
Thanks a million, Oliver. It's great to be here.
Thanks for coming up from Limerick.
That's all my pleasure. I'm sorry, no, I know it's a bit of a coming down to come to me from talking about Katie. Like, so apology in advance for to your listeners.
But like, since you are the writer among us and winner of various prizes, is there a way of summing up what's happened to Ireland in the last fortnight, or it hasn't even been a fortnight?
I know, it's unbelievable. Like, it's just that's the beauty of sport. Like, you know, it just brings people together. I mean, like, Kelly's victory last night was just one of these huge moments for Ireland, you know, and it's just everyone just seems so upbeat and positive and happy when these things happen, you know. I mean, she's incredible. Like, she's just, I love her. She's a fantastic person. We met Kelly and Mendy a few years ago at the Irish Book Awards, and they were just so nice and down to earth, just lovely people. And her family, like, to listen to Christopher there was lovely. Like, just seemed like such a decent, hard-working family. Like, the backbone of Ireland, really, people like that.
Yeah, they're incredibly articulate, aren't they?
Absolutely, really, yeah.
Deep thinking, and they say what's... they're not afraid to show a bit of emotion.
Yeah.
And to be... it's brilliant people to have around. The people in your book, you're fixated on a certain culture around Tipperary around there. Is there something in the waters there too?
Well, I mean, it's just so familiar. I mean, the language and landscape are so familiar. It's what allowed me to be a writer was the fact that I just decided to write in my own place and in my own voice.
Yeah,
and
good plan.
I mean, all of the people are very familiar. So there was no attempt by me to try to describe something I didn't know about when it came to writing about rural Ireland. But having said that, I mean, very few of the experiences in the book are my experiences. So you're always trying to guess at what it might be like to be somebody else and to experience things that you haven't experienced. But I mean, they feel like friends, and they are all, I mean, a lot of characters I write are composites and distillations of my own experience and the people I love and my friends and family. So there was no huge leap of imagination with the actual place or the people.
Do you have the accent in your head when you're writing?
I do, yeah. I try to get it as right as possible. It's very easy, even though it's my own accent, it's still very easy to tip into caricature and tip into so-called pennywhackery. So you have to be very careful, you know, to get it right, the kind of delocutions and the demotic and the kind of sounds that we make. But I think the way we use English in Ireland is so beautiful, and it's so varied. I mean, from street to street and village to village, things change. There are phrases you won't have heard before, and it's just beautiful.
I nearly wanted to read this book out loud as I was reading it, because it is like a kind of a script. It's inner monologues and the thoughts of people around that area. Can you remind people what The Spinning Heart was about and who the people in it were?
Well, The Spinning Heart was a series of 21 monologues, and all of the people speaking were from the same fictionalised version of my own home place in North Tipperary. And pretty much everybody was affected by the recession. Because I wrote the book in 2010 and it was set in the present day, I couldn't really ignore the recession. So it kind of became a book, you know, a recession book, kind of. And I wasn't crazy about the title, but in fairness, it served the book well.
Why didn't you like the title?
Because for me, it was a book about people and about, you know, about ordinary Irish rural working class people,
yeah,
like I am myself. And so I didn't really intend it to be a comment on the economy or politics or anything else, because, you know, those things don't occupy me too much. But that's what it became, which is fine, in fairness. I mean, I can't complain about it. But everybody in the book was familiar to me in different ways. And everybody kind of speaks about their current situation. And it seems very dramatic and it seems full of action, but it's not really. I mean, if you consider that the book is set over about six months, but you read a book in about 4 hours or 5 hours, it's a short book, you know, it does seem too much packed. Like, people often go like, would all those things really happen in a small place like that? But of course they would. I mean, in fairness, in one day, these things can happen, yeah.
Yeah. And they happen again, and mm-hmm. there's violence everywhere. What I found interesting, just jumping, because what's the time difference between it? When did the book, was it 2012, 2013?
2012, Spinning Heart came out, but the action, Heart Be at Peace, is around 10 years after the action in Spinning Heart.
There's a kind of a confidence about these people. So it's almost what we're talking about, Olympics and so on. It is echoed in this story as well. People have come out of the crash, and the psychology has kind of changed, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
in these characters.
Yeah, I mean, the way people see the world, I suppose, has kind of changed a bit. And Bobby Mahon is back in his feet and he started a new company. And actually, that's one of the main reasons why I wrote the book was because of Bobby. And the amount of people who ask me over the years, Donald, how's Bobby? How's he getting on? Because I didn't make it clear enough at all at the end of the spinning heart that Bobby was fine. And my mum worked in Tesco's for years and years, and people would queue at her till to ask her about Bobby Mahon. And they go,
where's Bobby Mahon?
Yeah, and then they go through the other characters, which was great to hear. And my mum always said, wouldn't it just be easiest for all of us if you wrote a sequel? And she said it to me so many times over the years. I'm so sorry I didn't do it so she could read it. But it's done now anyway, thank God.
And Bobby Mahon, soundness is his big quality, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Bobby's one of these guys that people look up to and people kind of envy as well in a way, and people want to emulate. And, you know, I mean, I put loads of my best friend and my uncles and people, you know, there's my father and strong male characters in my life into the character of Bobby. So he definitely is kind of somebody I would look up to myself.
Kind of a lovely man. And,
yeah.
And in the spinning heart, Facebook and kind of what was modern in those days was part of it. Now it's WhatsApp groups.
Yeah.
Is a
yeah.
big issue for poor old Bobby.
I know, poor Bobby, yeah. And I mean, these things can happen so easily. I think it's almost an age-old story about things going a bit wrong on Stags and guys coming home and, you know, and people saying like, oh, you know what happens in tour stays in tour and that kind of thing, but it never does really. So Bobby is kind of a bit worried about something that's happened, and he's also taken the problems of the world on his shoulders, as he always has done. And, you know, he sees an imminent danger, a very close threat to his family in the form of the drugs trade in the area. And Bobby thinks, this is my job. You know, I've got young kids, they're at risk here. So my job as a man and as a father and as a parent is to protect them.
It really struck me that whole fear and the grimness of the 2012, that the time when the spinning heart is set, is the economy and the kids going abroad. Now it's like, what's going to happen to your kids who stay here because of the explosion of drugs, particularly in rural communities, where we just didn't expect it to happen, but it has.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right through this novel.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened everywhere. It's happened all over the world. And it's just because my book is set in a small place, the effect of it seems magnified. And I suppose it is in a way, but it's an age-old story. Like, anywhere you go in Ireland now, you can see drug deals taking place. I saw one the other day myself, a person at the traffic lights in a car just handing drugs out through the window of their car, taking money in without even looking left or right, looking straight ahead all the time.
Yeah.
It's the most incredible thing to see.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems people can act with impunity. You know, I mean, sure, the guards are kind of hamstrung. I mean, you can't look at people sideways these days. You know, you have to be so careful. But it seems that in rural villages and towns, everyone knows who's dealing drugs. Everyone knows the car from which drugs are dealt, the house from where drugs are dealt, and it just seems to carry on and on and on. And what gets me is the way these guys walk around acting like we're all supposed to be scared of them, you know. And people are, of course they are. Mm-hmm. You know, these are dark forces at work, like,
they're,
you know,
scary,
but still,
yeah.
They're among us, you know, they're our own people as well, which is so strange.
And Bobby Mahon isn't scared of them.
No, see, Bobby, that's the thing with Bobby, like, he's scared of nobody. But, you know, Bobby's fears all centre on his own ability to see himself as a failure. You know, I mean, he's so scared of not being the man that he thinks people think he is. Bobby's got all these things going on inside. And that's a very common thing. You know, I hate the phrase toxic masculinity because it implies that being a man inherently is toxic. But Bobby has this idea that he has to stand up, that he has to be the man that people follow. And it's kind of natural too in him. He's a natural leader.
Is there a better phrase then? Because there's masculinity, which can be a good thing. And that's what the phrase toxic masculinity is when that goes wrong.
Exactly, yeah. But the two seem to have merged now. You know what I mean? There's an awful lot of talk about it. And
rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely, yeah. You know, and I don't think it's thought about enough. I think it's kind of bending about a little bit.
No one will say, God, Donald Ryan has lovely masculinity.
No, I can't hear it being said, no.
It's rarely used as a compliment, is what you mean. It started Bobby, and I, again, it reminded me of the seminar because it was like, I want to hear more from inside Bobby's head, what's going on. But we don't really find out really what's going on because you keep a few cliffhangers there because we don't hear from his wife until the end.
Yeah, it's the same format as Spinning Heart, so the speakers all speak in the same sequence, which made it very easy for me, to be honest. I didn't have to try too much to work out a new structure or a new forum. So I just followed the voices.
Oh, a bit lazy.
Ah, yeah, sure. Look,
he's at it again.
You have to take some shortcuts.
But it does this amazing thing because it means all the action, and there is action, kind of happens in the distance because we only hear afterwards and what people think and say about it.
Yeah, I like that way of telling the story. It's told so the actions lens through different eyes and you see different sides of it. And the voices came very easily. I mean, they were almost clamouring. I think I left it even, you know, I should have done this book earlier because they were kind of nagging away. And the story was written in my head before I sat down to put it onto the screen. And so it was pretty easy. I mean, the voices literally, like there's one voice of Kate, I think it is. Yeah, Kate. And she, I'll forget the names. When I got to her monologue, it was as though she was saying, "About time, Jesus, I'm waiting so long to tell you." And wait till hear what happened, you know. And I literally had to type really fast to keep up with what was going on in my head. It was amazing. Really? And I had no plan for Kate at all. Like, she just, it felt like it was being dictated. And when that happens, it's just pure magic and it's a joy.
Which one is Kate again? Can you remember?
Kate is Dennis's wife. Dennis is the man who killed Frank Mahon in The Spinning Heart.
Oh, yeah, God. There's so many characters in this. Sometimes it is.
Oh, I forget myself, yeah.
But so much happens in it. You said that it took you a while to put this in, but they kept talking to you. Your mum really wanted to see you do this book. She sadly didn't live to see it.
Yeah, so this is the first book now that mum wouldn't have read, which is sad. And she did. I mean, she asked me so many times, would you not write a sequel of Spinning Heart? Because, you know, she was kind of mired by people going, how's Bobby getting
his job? Yeah. Yeah, day's work.
And she was young, wasn't she?
She's only 71, yeah.
Really? What happened to her?
She had breast cancer.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's a terrible thing to go through with a family. Because you're still in your 40s, are you?
Yeah, I'm 48. It's shock, all right. Yeah, I remember years ago I read an article where somebody said that when a mother dies, the centre is gone and it's very hard for a family to hold together. You know, and it does feel that way now. We're all very close, but just that kind of gravitational force of motherhood is gone, you know, and it's a strange new world, all right. But look, it comes to us all, I suppose.
And everything you knew with her in the world there. And you've got so many strong female characters in this. You must be thinking of your mammy when you
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my last novel, The Queen of Earth Island, was pretty much based on mammy, even though she couldn't see it herself, in fairness, because when she read the manuscript, she went, "Where did you get that one Eileen from?" She didn't see a bit of herself in the character, who was based fairly closely on mam, in fairness, now. Well, I do. I mean, you know, I do take inspiration from mem all the time and my grandmother and the people around me. I mean, I've been very lucky to have such great people in my life that I can use as inspiration like that.
She was like a book editor, your mam, because there's not much swearing in it.
Oh, there's not much in this one, no. And actually, I just finished a novel, actually. It's only got 3 swear words. And I didn't think I could do it, but apparently I can. So
She hated swear.
No, she wasn't crazy about it, you know. And she was well able to swear herself now, but she didn't like me using it too much in the books. And, you know, she wasn't crazy about all my books, in fairness, no. She wasn't. And she was never flahoolock with praise. She never would praise something she wasn't impressed by. And, you know, some of them she thought were all good, but some were better than others. So, and it does feel as though you kind of miss that approval of your mother. I mean, no matter how old you get, you still want your mother to approve what you do.
Imagine that she's reviewing it in your head.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is glad you did it.
Yeah.
And your dad is, he's gone as well.
Yeah.
God, because you're a young man, aren't you, to have both parents?
Yeah, I suppose I'm 48 now. So I suppose not that young, but, and it comes to all of us, but the world does change a lot when your parents go. And, you know, it's amazing. You have to kind of, I said in the end of there to weekend, you kind of have to reimagine the world because, you know, we existence kind of is formed through our minds, through imagination. And you do have to kind of look at the world differently and reimagine things. And it's a very, very strange thing, all right.
I can't imagine it. Does it change the relationship you have with your kids when you lose your parents?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, it really does. It does focus you on your family, I think. Mm. And those relationships and how they're so precious.
And the other important mam in your life is Anne-Marie.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Anne-Marie really is an editor. Like she doesn't admit this, but she's got such a natural talent for it. It's incredible. And thank God, I mean, I was so lucky because I do print off everything I write at the end of my writing day. And poor Anne-Marie, I don't make her, now, in fairness. She doesn't feel like she won't do it, but she does tend nearly all of us to read it.
Really?
Yeah, and she has a certain type of reaction that I look for. And if I don't see that reaction, I know it's not quite right.
Is that a non-verbal?
It can be non-verbal, yeah, you know, and it can be contained in between what she says and the interstices. You know, she mightn't necessarily say it's not great, you know, but I'll know, I'll kind of know by her tone, her expression, right? Yeah. Oh, fuck it.
There's a high pitch, isn't there? This is good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
What, when she likes it, what are you watching out for?
Oh, I just know. I remember years ago, before I ever wrote a novel, she read a book called One Big Damn Puzzler by John Harding, an English novelist. And I read it as well. We both loved it. And I remember getting really jealous by her reaction to it. Like, really, no. I mean, just there, yeah, it's terrible jealousy. Like, I was thinking, oh, I'd love to write something she had a reaction to someday.
And I'd love to move her like that.
Yeah, so I looked for that same expression that she had when she read that novel.
And she did. She did have that reaction.
God, yeah. Oh, yeah, when I started to write the thing about December, I mean, I wrote it because I just wanted to finally have a novel finished. And of course, I plunged into writing that at the busiest time in our lives. We just got married and Anne-Marie was pregnant and I had just got a new job and I was working weekends and nights and we were flat out. And then I decided to take about half an hour a day to write that novel over about a year. But she loved it, you know, and the fact that she loved it meant I couldn't stop. And when I did stop around three quarters of the way through, she was just so disappointed, you know, and so I knew I had to finish it.
Okay.
And nothing ever matched that moment finishing that novel, writing-wise, just the sense of achievement, thinking, finally, I've finally written a book. It doesn't matter what happens now, it's just, it's done.
That's great. The thing. You dabbled in it and it becomes your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And exactly. You're now seven novels in?
Yeah, eight books in now and seven novels, yeah.
Did you, eight books, what's the...
There was a short story collection as
oh,
well.
Oh, yes, yeah. Very good. And there's also a novel that was never published.
It's a couple, actually, yeah. Yeah. And actually,
when you finished,
because it was when I wrote without any involvement from Anne-Marie, so that could be the problem because she was she was sick at the time. She was in recovery from cancer, and she wasn't really in the form for reading my my rubbish every day. Yeah. So she said, "Look, I trust you. This is your sixth book. You know, how far on can you go? So I'll wait till the end." Big mistake.
You never read it
very far wrong, yeah.
Because you wrote about this, didn't you? I read that essay that you did where you go out on to the silver mines, is it
right,
in your dad's car?
Yeah, sold MGB that I inherited. And so I go up to Tapkeeper Hill to celebrate. Just, that's a silly thing, you know. Just kind of, it's kind of a ritual now at this stage when I finish a book, to climb Keeper. And I kind of knew that day, climbing Keeper, that book will never see the light of day. I kind of knew, you know. And it had gone off to my editor and publisher, and I kind of expected them to be circumspect in politics as always, but to kind of say it's not really working as a novel. I kind of knew, it's strange, you know. On the one hand, I was thinking, oh, it's my best book ever. And on the other hand, I was thinking, it doesn't really quite work.
What's it like to have spent that amount of time and effort on something and realised?
Oh, it was totally fine, Oliver, honest to God, because you have to make these mistakes, you know. I do think that. I think every writer has these manuscripts in their closet that never will be published, but still will have taught them a lot about themselves as writers.
I see what you mean. So you kind of have to write something that's not going to work to get to the good stuff.
Absolutely, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Scrape it away. Anne-Marie's okay now. She had two brushes with cancer,
yeah.
Did she?
She did, yeah. She cervical cancer about 12 years ago and breast cancer a few years ago as well. But she's great now, thank God, yeah. She's very strong and she's in great form.
And the most important reader. Because she works in the... It's a family business now, isn't it?
It is pretty much, yeah. She's my editor and my first editor, really. I mean, my editor's Brian Langan, but Anne-Marie, you know, before something goes to Brian, it's to go to Anne-Marie, and Brian knows that. But she's also my manager and an agent, which is great.
So you're chatting books and reading the whole time?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, you get a lot of books sent to you in the post when you're published. So there's never a shortage. And yeah, she's a great reader as well.
Yeah, but not a writer herself.
No, not yet anyway.
Not yet.
She's no real inclination, in fairness, though.
There's time, plenty of time. Mm-hmm. And your two kids, are they teenagers now?
Yeah, Thomas is 16 and Lucy's 14. They're not too impressed by me at all, you know, as a writer. But hopefully they are as a father. But which means for them, it's just always been there. Like, it's just always been a thing in the family. So it's no big deal at all.
Are they readers or what are they interested in?
Lucy's a big reader, all right. Thomas, not so much these days now. He's more into soccer and women. But
that's curses, yeah. That. Soccer and women. But that's good masculinity. Just to
it is. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Just to reiterate. I'd say there's a fear of leaving cert. Is there in your book coming up?
Yeah, you see, The Spinning Heart was on the syllabus for a good while, and it was actually on the prescribed syllabus for a while, so it was almost unavoidable. But it's taken off that now, and so he reckons he's going to avoid it. But you never know. Things could change this year.
It pops up, doesn't it?
Yes. It does, yeah, because so things can go back on again, you know.
I'd say writers love when their books appear in the Leaving Cert.
Oh, it's brilliant. There's nothing like it. I remember years ago, I had a teacher called Martin Slattery for Leaving Cert English. He was a brilliant teacher. And he said, lads, in 50 years' time, one E could be on the Leaving Cert. And so I bet that by factor of about five, I think, because, yeah. Which is great. I still talk to Martin every now and again. He was a great teacher.
I've loads of messages coming through, and we'll come to them, actually. But we must do, first of all, I have to take a quick break. Welcome back. We're with Donal Ryan here. There's a couple of messages coming through. I read The Spinning Heart when it first came out. I still think of the chapter with the nurse in the nursing home. See, that's the, you love hearing that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
that kind of thing, moving them. My grandmother, Molly Ryan Cooper, lived in Kilmistulla beside the lay-by. We used to visit every Sunday and all my granny used to say was, keep in off the road, the Shearies are coming.
Sounds right.
The Shearies are wild drivers who were Donal's uncles.
That's right.
Allegedly.
Yeah, yeah.
Allegedly.
And they haven't changed.
That's from Christine Finnerty.
Oh, hi, Christine. How are you doing?
Do you know all the Finnerty? Do you know the Finnerty's?
Of course.
Good. Congratulations on the publication of the new book, Heartbeat at Peace. Donal is one of life's gentlemen. He was my tutor in Limerick a couple of years ago. Please pass all my best wishes. That's from Pat Griffin.
Hey, Pat. How are you doing?
And you're still a tutor, by the way, aren't you?
I am, absolutely.
The proper
yeah.
term. Yeah, where exactly?
I lecture in creative writing and the MA at UL, and it's great. It's brilliant just to have it, you know, just to have the job basically. But it's just such a joy to be involved with writers every day of my working life, and to have such great colleagues. Actually, I just got a proof copy of Fee Scarlett's new book. Fee's teaching it in UL. May All Your Skies Be Blue. Beautiful title. So it'll be out in the autumn, I think.
Oh, lovely. So you're reading away all the time,
yeah.
Encouraging. And so you're still technically a civil servant, despite your attempts.
I suppose, yeah, I never think of it that way, but I suppose you could say that. Yeah, yeah.
Because your career was varied. It was workplace relations.
I was there, yeah, and I was in the vehicle registration unit in Shannon for years and years.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I loved it. I loved those jobs, to be honest. Yeah,
those people always answer the phone. I like those people down. And
oh, we're great in Shannon, absolutely, yeah. Best office in the country.
People go, you can't get hold of anyone, and they just ring Shannon. They'll be straight on to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll find out about the Shearies. Yeah. And how they drive at the area. Do we have to take one more break? We have to take one more break before we go. Hang there, Donal. Hang there. We have information about you. There's breaking news, Donal, in the Olympics. As you've been following it all along,
yeah.
Sarah Lavin has finished second in her heat to qualify for the semi-finals of the 100-metre hurdles.
Oh, well done, Sarah. Isn't that fantastic?
That's great. That's a kind of a big surprise because, you know, the pressure is off now you've won all those medals. So we'll be looking forward to the rest of it. We don't know what we're going to do when it's over.
I know, you'll be distraught, yeah.
But one thing you can do on the 15th of August, see that for a link now on radio, is join Donal Ryan, who will be in conversation with Alex Clark in the Pavilion Theatre, lovely place in Dunlera.
That's right, yeah. Thanks for bringing books
in
for that.
County Dublin. You'll be talking about Heartbeat and Peace. You're going to have a nice time. Are you doing stuff in Limerick, I presume, as well?
Yeah, well, I'll be in Nina tomorrow night in my hometown.
Oh, yes.
In the Nina Bookshop with John and Catherine Ryan in Summerhill. So thanks for that, guys, for a launch. And then we'll have the launch of the Kenny's Special Edition in Kenny's Bookshop in Lisbon in Galway on Friday night.
Oh, right. Okay, brilliant. But you live in Limerick, but tip us to come first on the list.
eventually
make your way.
Right the border, yeah.
Heartbeat Peace is published by Doubleday, available from tomorrow.
That's right.
You can pre-order it online.
Absolutely.
Donal Ryan, thanks a million.
Thank you so much, Oliver.